been essentially the forerunner in publicizing material that NASA had photographed of Mars, which indicates that there are some kind of structures on Mars that are probably man-made, and not necessarily us, but somebody of intelligence.
Intelligent design.
Yeah.
And I do want to correct the record in one sense. We're not publicizing. We have been leading teams of scientists like Dr. Mark Carlotto at TASC, who have done innovative, original, and unprecedented analyses of these images, and it has been the combined analyses, our own Errol Torin at Defense Mapping, Dr. Carlotto, and many others, that I have now been invited three times to present to NASA, once to Goddard, to a colloquium of engineers and scientists, the packed auditorium in December of 88, and twice now to NASA Lewis. I should say by postscript that just before my first presentation, invited for Goddard, NASA headquarters tried to pull the same thing. They called, they found out about it, and they called the head of the colloquium committee, and they tried to get me uninvited. This was not Dr. Brownsville, this was another department. They tried to get our presentation of the Viking data and our analyses up to 1988 rescinded, get us uninvited so we could not make the presentation. And it was only with the intervention of a few key reporters at newspapers and television stations around the country who have been following our work and following the story that let them know gently but firmly that it would create a firestorm and at least the appearance of that classic word these days, cover-up. It's like, what do you got to hide that you're afraid of conversation on facts and figures? That forced the committee to go forward with the invitation, and I appeared, Dr. Carlotto appeared, and Errol Torin appeared, and there is a video which we shot of that presentation, which was the first of a series of the NASA Sidonia briefings. When I was invited by Dr. Kleinberg, who was the head of Lewis, director of Lewis up until he moved to become head of Goddard later this year, it was to address all 4,000 employees in what was called an alert presentation. It was carried on closed circuit all over the laboratory in many, many, many buildings. It was provided to us as a master tape. Those tapes we are now in the process of considering releasing for general public consumption,
right?
Because they contain a much more detailed analysis and presentation of the data. Separately but concurrently, just before I was to go to NASA Lewis this spring, I got a call from Dr. Bondurant, who said he would be elegantly pleased if I would make the time available the preceding night for an extensive interview in the NASA Lewis Conference Center, which I did. 2.5 hours of the most interesting and intensive and perceptive questions on this whole research to date. It is from that 2.5 hours that they have distilled the half-hour Hoagland's Mars program, barring NASA headquarters' rather dramatic and last-minute intervention.
Okay, now you said before the break, and we have another break scheduled, and when we come back, let's have the answer to the question of why you think it's dead. And what about the mysterious footage that somebody else wants? Just hold that thought, if you would. We're back with Richard Hoagland. Okay, Richard, do you still have the thoughts?
One of the things in this program that people will or won't see, depending upon how things break now, Dr. Carlotto has been working very quietly at new image enhancements of Sidonia. And for those people who have not seen the NASA-released footage of Mars footage, JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, a couple of years ago, did a stunning color three-dimensional flyover of a section of Mars based on supercomputer generation of altitudes and profiles, so that it's as if you were flying over Mars in a helicopter. What Dr. Carlotta was able to do with the Sidonia footage is to do the same thing. And he has created the first helicopter flyover of the so-called city, the D&M pyramid, and the face, back and forth several times, rising up, giving us good view angles. And the result is absolutely stunning. And we've done some special effects things in the computer, so we've stop-framed it so you can see various features in great detail. All of this will appear, or would have appeared, for the first time on television anywhere in this NASA-produced program out of Lewis Hoagland's Mars. What you might be interested in is that simultaneously with the coverage and footage being made available to us for the program, Dr. Carlotta received a call from Carl Sagan's people. And what they are doing is they are putting together a revised version of the Cosmos television series for home distribution, the video cassette market. And what they specifically asked on behalf of Dr. Sagan was the same Sidonia flyover footage. Now, this raises some rather remarkable questions, because Carl has been adamant that he is only interested in real science. He has further been adamant that Sidonia and the questions of the face, the pyramids, our intelligence hypothesis, are not real science. End of discussion. So the question arises, why does Dr. Sagan want Dr. Carlotto's Sidonia flyover footage in Cosmos if it's not real science? And what this will now allow, if Hoagland's Mars does not go on the air, is that the first time people will see this footage is not in our material, but in Dr. Sagan's copyrighted Cosmos program series on video cassette. It is kind of interesting. It gives you a slightly nauseous feeling, frankly. This data, what we have found on Mars, is stunningly upsetting to contemporary worldviews in every scientific discipline and almost every area of human endeavor, if it is real. We have been adamant that we have got to verify what we think is there. We have gone to the Congress. We have met with the chairman of key committees. People can call these committees, and they will get a person on the phone who says, yes, NASA Sidonia is now on the boards to be rephotographed by Mars Observer in 1993,
mm-hmm.
Put into orbit, and it's because Hoagland and the Mars mission personnel met with Chairman Rowe, Robert Rowe, in Washington. And appropriate action was taken by the full committee and the subcommittee on space, and letters were exchanged between NASA headquarters and the committees, and everybody's agreed now that we're going to rephotograph this.
Mm-hmm.
It is remarkable, given that backdrop, that there should be some squeamishness about simply having a conversation about the data pointing toward its verification or falsification in the scientific idiom in 1993. I mean, what are they afraid of?
Okay. Interesting stuff, isn't it? What are they afraid of, Richard?
Well, let's speculate a little here. Suppose it's there. All right? Suppose it's there, and suppose that somehow in future years we find out that a lot of people in our neighborhood space agency, NASA, have known all along, since 1976 it was there, and they've not leveled with the American people.
Well, but haven't other astronauts already written letters, even to the United Nations, saying that there are extraterrestrial vehicles that they've encountered?
The difference is, ET vehicles, if they exist, are shimmerous. They come and go as they please. This is at a latitude and a longitude, and a U.S. mission, in combination with a Soviet involvement, is going to be going back there on a date certain, going into orbit and taking pictures that are public domain and are owned by every person listening to this program, even as I speak.
Yeah, but let's... I gotta believe that one of the reasons that Hoagland's Mars has been put on ice has got to be because of the Middle East thing. Once your program would be transmitted via satellite with the NASA sticker on the beginning and the end of it, obviously the press would jump on it, and it might steal some of the thunder from Mr. Bush's project.
Well, it's even more disturbing than that. You know, I couldn't help but watch and listen, because I had one ear on Sun Radio and I had an eye on Jennings on ABC watching from the South White House lawn. This is a countdown to war. I mean, we are watching the clock, the sands and the hourglass sliding through.
Yeah.
And I could not help but think that what we have found on Mars in the form of an intelligently derived geometric message leading us to a set of physics, in turn leading us to a technology that, by the voices of your own listeners out there, works. There are people who are calling me now all hours of the day and night who have spent $1,000 here for magnets and motors and, you know, $5,000 there, and they're putting themselves together in computer bulletin board networks and writing manuals. And there is a tremendous excitement, because the bottom line of this is it's not an academic exercise. Hoagland's Mars, as a program produced by NASA, is the opening gun to a whole new way of life that taps a virtually inexhaustible energy source for the benefit of mankind. We are about to go to war. We watched a few moments ago a president basically give Saddam Hussein a deadline to put American lives, men and women on the line, lives of Iraqis on the line, over a resource that is really useless. Now, it's not going to be useless overnight, but even raising of a credible set of physics that would raise questions would cast all of what's going on in a very different and, I think, essential light for people who care about people. And that now is not going to take place because people are not being allowed to see the data for themselves.
Well, it is very, very exciting to us that a great number of our listeners have gotten the End Machine book, which we published, thanks in part to you and your work, and also Dr. De Palma and Dr. Tiwari of India. That information is now coursing around the globe, as you well know, and we have almost two or three calls a day from people who are calling us saying things like, I showed this to my physics professor, who said that it could not generate electricity, and when it did, he said, gee, that confounds the laws of physics. And, yeah, we're getting calls from other people who are saying that we took this to the university, and they said it is impossible to work, and when it lit up the light bulbs, they wanted to know, how did I do that? And other people who are simply saying that nobody in their right mind would ever believe you could draw electricity right out of a spinning magnet, but I did, and I drew so much power out that it started burning up the wires.
Well, we have to be careful here because these are not toys. This is not a plaything. You don't want to fry the cat, for those of us who are cat lovers. I had wanted to spend some time this Friday afternoon discussing with two physicists who went from Edwards Air Force Base up to Dr. De Palma's laboratory what they saw and videoed, because they are quite amazed and confounded and pleasantly surprised and all the other surprises one can think of at the physical layout and the energy input, energy output measurements that they themselves made. And they are, after the turn of the year, going to take physicists from Edwards. The Edwards people have now evidenced interest to bring De Palma's technology down to Edwards to be tested in the laboratory, and there was some discussion yesterday about building some of the other devices that are in the De Palma research papers, particularly the spinning discs, and investigating with test masses and frequency standards and things the anomalous effects in space-time that go on in the vicinity of a rapidly rotating object, a la the n-space equations that we have discussed on this program many times. I come back to the tragedy that if NASA headquarters is allowed to have its way, if Dr. Brown's review of this tape is allowed to proceed at a slow snail's pace, we could well be in a war, a shooting war with people dying like flies on both sides before the American people get to see the database that says perchance this is irrelevant to the future human condition. And that is a real tragedy that only phone calls to Dr. Brown at this point, I think, can head off.
Well,
let me suggest something else.
Yeah.
Dr. Bondurant is a fax machine, and things in writing are always more powerful than things that are evanescent. If you have a fax machine, you want to send a quick fax to Dr. Bondurant so he can show it to headquarters, which he said he would do.
Mm-hmm.
His fax number is area code 216-433-3344. That's area code 216, that's in Cleveland at the NASA Lewis Research Center, 433-3344. And something in writing can be very much in demand right now on this, I would think.
Okay.
Well, I talked with Dr. De Palma yesterday, and he read me two letters, one from Japan and one from India. Dr. Tiwari, who, as you know, works for the Atomic Power Board, the Kaiga Project in India. After several months of silence, we have a very long letter, which he has sent to me by post, and I hope to have it to read to you this afternoon, and I do not have it yet. But in that letter, Tulare describes his recent experiments, his refinements of the efficiencies. Remember, he tried a new version of the end machine, and he got some disturbing vibrations that he didn't understand that were impacting on the efficiency. And apparently this guy is very careful, so he didn't want to talk to anybody or show anybody until he resolved the problems. He now apparently has a unit bootstrapped producing electricity and using the electricity to split hydrogen and oxygen. In other words, you put the current in ordinary water, electrolysis, you split the hydrogen and oxygen, and for long-term storage or reconversion back to electricity, you then combine the hydrogen and oxygen in a fuel cell developed by NASA during the Gemini program, among other places. That independent solution to the storage and drawdown of power at some future time from an end machine was independently arrived at by an engineer I talked to last night in Buffalo, New York. And so it shows you the kind of interesting, fertile, creative engineering imagination that is going to be brought to the idea of moving from laboratory demonstrations of this technology to commercially viable products in a very short time horizon.
All right, Richard Hoagland, hang on if you would. Ladies and gentlemen, we're trying to save America. That is one of the things we really would like to do.
He's really in the middle on this because Lynn is a courageous, innovative guy who was trying to do his part to be consistent with the NASA charter and the Constitution and move this country and this planet forward. And he was in agony, I mean, yesterday, because he was really caught between a rock and a hard place. And he said, I wanted you to hear it from me first. And I admire his integrity for calling me and letting me know. And I let him know. I said, let's hit it on the head. I said, there are people out there who are going to claim that this is some kind of cover-up. I said, please communicate that to headquarters for me. And he said, I will. So what I'm doing this afternoon is, with his knowledge, that it is important that people understand they can take an active role and they can support Dr. Bondurant in trying to simply educate the American people on our options and important data that has been too long lagging in files and has not been researched.
Yes. Okay. One of our members called, David Chambers, said that Dr. Brown's assistant, Frank Owen, is saying that NASA wants to see the tape because they understand that Richard Hoagland promotes his book in the program and NASA cannot endorse commercial ventures.
There is zero promotion of monuments in that script. Zero.
Well, there you are. We'll be
right. Oh, is.
Okay, hang on, Richard, hang on.
Let me respond to Mr. Owen's assertion. Frank Owens is a controller. He is a money person in the education office. He's not an educator. You know, he has nothing to do with education. He is Mr. Moneybags for NASA Education. I find it remarkable that he says that, claims that, because A, how does he know if they haven't seen the program, all right? B, the program is being produced by NASA Lewis. I have nothing to do with the production. I have no control. The sound bites that are used in the interview on the script that I was given, which I presume is the same script that was given to NASA headquarters. I mean, fax machines allow you to send scripts in a few seconds anywhere in the world, makes no reference. I am not quoted plugging the monuments of Mars. If there is any attribution, it is in a super under my name as author of, and that's at the discretion of the producers. That wasn't my insistence. So, I mean, I think these people don't have a leg to stand on. I think it's a frankly rather lame excuse, and I would urge people to question further.
Well, you got to have a story when people are calling up. Dr. Robert Brown's number is 202-453-1110, 202-453-1110.
Well, you know, ABC Television is starting a new series, which apparently they plan to air this coming spring, called America's Best Kept Secrets.
Okay.
And they have been researching the story, and we're in discussion with them about Mars and Cydonia. It's kind of ABC's answer to unsolved mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
There is a growing perception, I think, on the part of intelligent American viewers and listeners that this government lies.
Oh, yeah, like a rug.
Things that are not in keeping with the Constitution, and certainly with the First Amendment. And I think... I have found in this script, by the way, the terrible reference to my book.
Oh, no.
Page 12, Dr. Bondurant says, of all the objects that you describe on Mars, which have caused the most controversy, and which have you found to be the most interesting? And I say in reply, well, the one that obviously is the most controversial is the face itself. As I said in the book that I wrote, Monuments of Mars, it's the last thing you'd expect to find on another planet, basically because, and I go on for two pages in detailed analysis with that as a passing reference to, of course, where we have put 15 years of the data and analysis that people can find on the record. If you're not allowed to cite your published works, what is going on here, Chuck?
Okay.
My problem is that if NASA, in their infinite wisdom, will withhold a simple expository interview where we discuss the data and show some pictures, what will they do in 1993 when photographs 50 times better come in with unequivocal evidence that what we claim could be there is in fact there? Will they have the courage to show these photographs to the American people unexpurgated as of date and time? I really don't think that they will, and that's why I think that the politics of this process are critical. If we can make them behave, if we can make them be honest and act with integrity on this issue, then it forebodes a much better showing in 1993 when the really important images come in. When it came to their supering me on the screen, you know, where TV identifies as being interviewed, I specifically asked to be identified as director of the Enterprise Mission, our educational project. I did not ask for a super referencing the Monuments of Mars. So this is all a little bit irrelevant to the real problem, which is what is going on, what don't they want you to see? About the same time we did the first presentation, Dr. Lynn Bondurant, who is head of education for NASA Lewis, took us aside in the conference room and did a 2.5-hour interview, which is the basis of this program, which it was their decision to produce and air on the NASA satellite, SpaceNet 1, Transponder 3, on January 6, 1991 at 12 noon on a Sunday, to be called Hoagland's Mars, and to be about a half-hour program, the first 50 minutes to be a reprise of the history of NASA's investigation of Mars via unmanned spacecraft, and the second half of the program to be an overview of our own research into the alleged monuments of Mars against the backdrop of what we know of the planet, pointing toward verification in 1993 with the upcoming unmanned NASA Mars Observer spacecraft. Everything was on track. Program has been in production for 9 months since March. Scripts have apparently gone back and forth between NASA Lewis and headquarters. Everything was on track until Thursday last, 1 week ago this afternoon, when I suddenly got a call from Dr. Bondurant telling me that he had received a call from Dr. Robert Brown at NASA headquarters, head of the education division of NASA, putting a stop on the program, asking for an immediate review of the program, and Dr. Bondurant told me that, he, quote, I cannot make the January 6th air date.
Okay, let's stop right there. Let me do the break, and when we come back, you tell me whether it's going to be on satellite or not, or what the present situation is. Are they now suppressing Hoagland's Mars, and what is the current status? Stay with us, everybody, for the people continues. We're back. Richard, now, what is the status? Are we going to see it or aren't we?
We don't know. I mean, I wish I could give you a definitive answer. There's been an awful lot of activity in the last week. Tons of people have been calling and sending faxes and sending mail to Dr. Brown and NASA headquarters. They have also been sending copies and making phone calls to Chairman Robert Rowe, Chairman of the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, which is absolutely what has to happen because the committee really is running the show. I mean, they authorize NASA's budget. They have said they're interested in this important research. They want to get to the bottom of it. And they told a couple of reporters who have since called me that they are on top of it, that the committee is interested in what's going on at headquarters, and they want to get to the, they want to look into what is going on and why NASA's suddenly kind of calling a halt. When we were on the air last week, you remember that one of your listeners called headquarters and talked to a Frank Owens, who is a deputy director of education in NASA headquarters.
Yeah.
And Owens gave out the, and I'll use the word excuse because I can substantiate that now, gave out the excuse that the reason that this review was suddenly called is because I was using the program to plug my book. Well, it turns out that that is a lie.
A book plugger, eh?
Yep. Well, I mean, I read the script. I think I read page 12 of the script that we have, which is the one reference in the whole program, half our program, kind of a throwaway line where I say, in my book, Monuments of Mars. I mean, it's not exactly a heavy plug. Be that as it may, there is ample precedent. The same people have done a program with Dr. Brian O'Leary, who was the former scientist astronaut. They're calling it O'Leary's Mars. Dr. Bondurant did the program with him in the summer. It was aired this past summer on the NASA satellite. It's to be aired again in a few days in December on the WestStar 4 satellite from NASA Lewis. And in it, Dr. O'Leary plugs his book, Mars 1999, several times, which is the basis of the concept of this program. So that doesn't really, you know, hold water in terms of saying that there's a problem with me plugging a book. What in fact we find has happened is that we have a deep throat source at NASA headquarters. There are a lot of very good people in NASA. I would like to say that on the record, that NASA is filled with dedicated men and women who really believe that the space program is the last best hope for mankind in terms of lifting us out of our morass of short-term thinking and setting us on a course of applying technology to the future development of all of humankind. I mean, that is basically NASA's raison d'etre. That's why NASA was created. There are a lot of men and women there who still believe that and every day go into their jobs toiling with that as their objective. They really feel they are serving mankind, and they are.
All right, 1 minute till break. Go ahead.
One of those people ran into Frank Owens in the hall 2 days ago, and this subject was discussed. And Frank Owen admitted to this person, who I have known for 20 years, that the real reason they are putting a stop on Hoagland's Mars is because the planetary community, the planetary scientists at JPL and other places in California, who were overseeing the Viking mission in 1976, which took these pictures, and who have insisted for 15 years there is nothing interesting on them, that they, quote, pitched a fit, and that they have very heavy clout at NASA headquarters, and they were the ones who are turning heaven and earth to prevent this program from airing because, and this is a direct quote,
it would give the entire subject what? We'll find out right after the break. Stay with us. Let's take the last two sentences and do it again.
Okay. Owens, who is the Deputy Director of Education at NASA headquarters, said to our longtime friend and source inside NASA that the real reason that they called for this sudden review of Hoagland's Mars is because the planetary community has thrown a fit. They have got very heavy clout. They're making a lot of waves. They do not want to see the program on the air because it would give the whole subject, i.e. the intelligence hypothesis, unwarranted legitimacy. And what this is tantamount to doing is a priori censorship. What is happening is a tiny subculture. I mean, we're talking 40 or 50 scientists in the United States, tops, having a veto, an absolute ironclad veto on the thinking, on a discussion that affects 5 billion people on this planet. There are 50,000 members of the American Association for the Advancement of Science who have never seen this data because these 40 or 50 people called the planetary community, you know, like a medieval guild, think they own the solar system. And they think it in such loud voices that they have caused headquarters now to recoil in shock and to review this program and subject it to all kinds of criteria that no other programs prior to this have been subjected to. And that really is prior restraint. It's certainly against the First Amendment. It's like the Army telling the Navy what to do. If you want to look at the setters as, you know, separate branches of the same force, you can use that metaphor. It's pretty turgid stuff. And the lame excuse that I plugged the Monuments of Mars in the program and am using it to sell my book turns out to be exactly that, a very thin excuse.
I agree. So, what can you do, or what can we do, to further assist now, being that we're talking between the 3 to 4 Eastern hour? There's a lot of people have not heard this before, so who do you want them to call or write, or what should they do in order to be able to see the program?
Well, it is important. We're pursuing several avenues simultaneously. The first, of course, is that you have a very vocal constituency, and I use that term very carefully. Americans, when they get their dander up, can make things happen. A lot of people from For the People all over the country have called. A lot of station managers. I mean, there are press people involved all the way up now to Jack Anderson, who asked for fax copies of the documents and the invitations to NASA and all that. So Anderson's people are looking into this, and he is a very powerful columnist in Washington. There are people from ABC looking into it. There are people from CNN looking into it. There are people from the Washington Times looking into it. And there's a lot of ordinary folks who I frankly think count the most, because their voices, both to headquarters and to the key congressional committee, have caused a literal firestorm. And if we keep up